Hey there. Thanks for tuning in to Powerful Perspectives, a podcast documenting a group of high school students' journey to discovering true authority in a world of competing voices. My name is Amber DeLugash, and I teach a dual credit composition course in Bolivar, Missouri. Last semester, my students wrestled with the coursework through the lens of an essential question: what does it mean to be an American? At one point, a student reflected that stories create connection, and connection creates understanding. Therefore, we decided that in order for us to walk away from the semester with a greater understanding of the question, we had to listen to the experiences and insight of others outside of our limited vantage points. So we hosted a variety of people with different perspectives, and we published our dialogue on a separate podcast called The American Experience. This semester, we're striving to answer the question, what is power? If we learned one thing from last semester, it was that there is great power in listening to understand. So we decided it was crucial to call in experts once again and publish our conversations. As you listen, keep in mind that each discussion is organic and unscripted. Students are gathering around the table, some figurative and some literal, to hear from our guests. You'll receive the full school experience, complete with bells, announcements, and tardiness. Thanks for stepping into our world as we try to step into the worlds of others. Here's another episode of Powerful Perspectives. Last week, we had the honor of sitting around the table with our guest, Pamela Burke. Pamela currently resides in Springfield, Missouri with her husband and two children. She has an impressive resume of world traveling, risk-taking, creating, summer camp running, homeschooling, mentoring, and thrift store dominating. But Pamela's larger-than-life persona came to a halt when she started experiencing chronic pain. She shared her story with us and all of its twists and turns as we learned through her lens about the power of suffering.
So a little bit, I guess, to understand who I am. I actually lived in Bolivar for 8 years. That's how I met this girl. And so yeah, that was a really cool season of life. I currently live in Springfield. I've lived lots of nooks and crannies in the world, but currently in Springfield. North side, guys, represent North Side Springfield. So she asked me to speak on the power of suffering, and I'm like, girl, why are you doing that to these kids? But she has walked with me through some, like, heaviness in my life. So I get to, like, kind of throw up on you guys today.
Yeah.
A little bit of that. So
I love that.
I love you. I love you. So I kind of...
Are you allowed to cuss?
Okay. That's a no. Okay, so I thought that I was, like, a pretty... I thought that I was pretty cool. Insert maybe how you might, I might interpret myself. I thought that, like, because I had traveled the world, I'd lived in a lot of cultures, I'd lived in New York City. I was a social worker in New York City. I partnered with the NYPD to pick up kids off the street. So I thought, you know, I can do some stuff. Send me anywhere in the world, I can do it. Me. And now that I'm a mom, I'll take my two kids, and I will push my stroller through the hood. So that's where the story kind of begins. My husband was getting ready to finish up some grad school in Philadelphia. We were going to partner with some people who had adopted, like, the worst block in Philly, which was, like, in Philly back then was, like, crazy. So I was going to move my two small children to this crazy block, and we were going to partner with this church actually to just help be good neighbors to this neighborhood. And they had already moved in, the people that were there, and, like, started a clinic. They were pediatricians. They were, like, really investing in this place already. So I'm like, okay, we can do this. A little bit frightening, like, anytime I was, like, searching for houses, like, all the news articles of the murders were coming up. I'm like, all right, don't let grandma see that. But so I also naturally was like, you know, maybe my skill set could improve a little bit. I'm gonna go ahead and get my concealing carry, you know, just in case somebody tries to, you know, t- take one of my kids. So I just need to be able to take care of it. So, but I'm still feeling very confident that I can handle this. So, this is like around the holidays. We decide, we like kind of flew out to Philly. We talked with everybody. We're like making our plans. Come back home. And I had noticed I started having some crazy chest pain over the holidays. And I'm like, you know, it's probably just like stress from planning the move, and the holidays are crazy. And so I'm just like, it'll get better. But by February, it had gotten like pretty rough to where I'm like, okay, this can't be normal. And I'm asking all my friends, like, does your chest just like hurt all the time? Like when you go to bed, and they're like, no, that doesn't happen. So I'm like, okay. So I start going to the doctor, start trying to figure out what's going on, and they think I have like everything under the sun. So then like my joy, I don't know if any of you have like been sent around to many specialists and that whole weight game. Oh, it's, we can commiserate afterwards about that. So I was in that season. Still not figuring anything out, but all I know is now I'm home with my two small children, and just to like pour them a glass of milk, I had to like go back and like recover for like an hour just to do that. And I'm like trying to open up the peanut butter jar to make them a sandwich, because that's all I can do is make sandwiches. And they're like cheering me on. You can do it, mommy. You can do it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, precious little humans. So everything started to get like just really intense, and diagnosis was not coming. And so my only natural conclusion is I'm gonna die before they figure this out. Like, that's the only, like, you don't get this bad and not die. That was my only conclusion. So by, this is like June, so it kind of like all got real bad in February. They had like said that I had a million things, and then they said I didn't have a million things. So by June, I'm just like saying my goodbyes to my family. And I took out a like $1 million life insurance policy, and I'm like, at least I can like kind of leave my family with like enough money to go start an orphanage in India or something like that. Like, told my husband, like, babe, this is it for me. And so naturally, as I'm like in this like sure belief, like they came to my house, did the whole like testing to be approved for the life insurance policy. Also, I'm seeing a functional medicine doctor at the time, which I don't know if any of you are familiar with that, but it's just natural. So I'm doing like the craziest. I was doing a mitochondria diet, and all the supplements that, you know, are gonna like for sure be the thing. And because I believe I am dying, my, like, normally when you're on a diet, you're, like, on a diet. But because my life hinged on this diet, I was, like, for real. Like, I'd never been, like, on a diet, like, so for real in my life. And taking these supplements, like, religiously, and, like, doing everything that the doctor said, because it's my only chance at seeing my kids grow. And so it got really intense. The depression was pretty real, because by the end of summer, I survived the summer, and I was like, no way. Like, I thought for sure that was gonna be the end. This is 2015. For sure, like, that was my last hurrah. But I lived, and then by August, I got a letter from the light is at my beep.
Teachers, excuse me for the interruption.
So,
what was I saying? You were saying that.
August. Oh, yeah, I made it to August. And I get a letter in the mail from the life insurance company that says, girl, you are too sick. We are not covering your life insurance policy. I'm like, oh, great. I guess I have to live now because now I can't leave my family a bunch of money. So we got to figure something out, basically. Which is just crazy, by the way, that life insurance would turn you down because you're too sick. What? That's what you're for. But anyway, I realized at that point, like in August, that like, holy cow, I might not be dying, but maybe this is going to be my quality of life. Like, maybe I'm not going to be the girl that has the sexy, like, cool thing in Philly. Maybe I'm going to be the girl who can't get off the couch and everybody forgets who she is. And I just kind of turn into this other person, not who I find myself to be. So that was even a little bit worse than the idea of dying, because at least dying was like escape and all that. So now I'm like, okay, crap, I think I'm going to live, maybe. But what is this life going to look like? So I'm still like doing this diet and supplements like it's my religion. I'm just like, this is gonna come through eventually. I just need to be patient. Still trying to figure out what's going on. No word. So by Thanksgiving, of course, Thanksgiving meal has nothing to do with... Another one?
No, you're good.
Okay. Thanksgiving meal has nothing to do with, like, a mitochondria diet, and I'm just like, screw it. Like, I'm so depressed right now. Like, it's not helping. I've been doing this so hardcore for so long. So at Thanksgiving, I kind of throw it all to the wind. I'm like, I think it was the end of October, beginning of November. And so I just decide I'm going to do what I want to do. Like, I'm still going to go to the doctor and try to figure things out, but I'm not doing any more of the treatments that were, like, kind of sucking life from me. And so then, fast forward, my husband's a school teacher, so he can relate to this environment better than me. He is, like, the sponsor of, like, the Honor Society at the school that he was teaching at. So they were having a Christmas parade. And I had like the worst week. I always say it was India in my house because I only get that sick when I'm in India. Like the kind where it's like coming out both sides and like you don't even know if you're alive or not or what is going on. And my kids, they're precious kids, but they just like, they're also like the kids that are gonna do what they're gonna do. So they're like literally taking like potato chips and like doing this all over the couch while mom's in the bathroom. And I'm like coming out and I'm like, oh, I don't even know what's going on here. And I just like turn back around. Like it was just one of those weeks, we'll just say that, where everything was really bad. So then this is like a Thursday night. My husband's like, I think he could see, like, I've got to get her out of the house. And he's like, I really need your help stringing up these pink lights on this little, like, SUV thing for our breast cancer float. And I'm like, the kids need to get out of the house. I'll do it. So I, like, literally look like an Eskimo because the cold is, like, horrible. So I'm, like, so bundled up. And I go and, like, make myself attend this Christmas parade. And this man pulls up, and he's, like, an old friend, but, like, I haven't seen him in a while. And honestly, I thought that he kind of, like, turned crazy. So he pulls up. However, his wife, who died of breast cancer, was, like, one of those just precious people. And so, naturally, as I'm stringing these pink lights on this thing, I think of her. Her name is Lynn. And so he rolls up, and I'm like, hey, I couldn't help but just remember Lynn as I'm doing this. And he was like, yeah, and then he starts going off on, like, he's been, like, off somewhere out of state and, like, seeing all these miracles. And I'm like, mm-hmm, like, sure. Like, I don't believe you, honestly, is what I was thinking. But my husband, who I guess had a little bit more, like, wherewithal in him, was like, oh, you've been seeing miracles, which isn't naturally, I wouldn't naturally expect that from my husband, but he was like, Pamela has been, like, having, like, the worst year ever. She's been in so much pain and we can't figure it out. Will you pray for her? And I'm like, sure, pray for me. Like everybody else says, you can pray for me too. That would be great. So he prays for me. It was a really simple, like, 30-second prayer. We go on with our night. I didn't think anything of it. The next day, I had a neurology appointment up here in Springfield. And normally, so we live like 3 hours away at that time. And so we were going to stay up in Springfield for the night. Normally, kind of getting ready for those sorts of things would, like, just, like, completely take me out. Well, that morning, I'm, like, getting us packed up, and we're driving. We've been on the road, like, 15 minutes, and I realized, like, for the first time, like, I'm not hurting. Like, that's crazy, and I'm just like, holy cow, like, I just did all that stuff, and I'm not hurting. And then I was like, huh. And for the first time, I thought of this man's prayer, and I'm like, no way. Like, did something happen? And then, of course, so not me, guys. I'm not the hero of this story. I'm like, nah, it's all going to come back this afternoon. So I proceed to my neurology appointment. It's 11 o'clock appointment, and I, like, tell him how horrible I was doing because I had remember, like, the horrible week. I tell him how horrible I'm doing, and but then all day I felt good. The next day I felt good. By Sunday morning I'm a mess. I'm just like, for real though, like, did that just happen? Did this literally just get taken away from me?
Can I have his number?
Yes. Yes. So, insanity, right? And I just, that's basically all I could keep saying all day was like, this is crazy. This doesn't happen. Like, maybe this happens in, like, third world situations where there isn't a doctor. Like, where, like, maybe you need a miracle or, like, the whole world's gonna end. But this doesn't happen in America. Like, I was a Christian, but I was, like, not sure. Like, I don't know. It was just crazy to me. So, now I'm the crazy lady. It's okay. I don't get it either. So we are still having plans to move, but there's still a lot of healing that needed to happen because for those of you who maybe have a family member that suffers from chronic pain, or maybe you yourself do, you understand that a caretaker also goes through it. And so my husband, like, needed some for real, like, healing season too. So he had a good buddy from high school. He and his, like, best friend from high school, they played football together. They came to faith at the same time when they were 17. So he had just planted a church on the north side of Springfield. So we were like, let's just go and, like, be in community for a little bit. So we reroute everything to Springfield instead of Philly. And so then there's, like, this, and my husband is from Springfield, so all his family is there. How long have I been? Like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to be so fast. So now that we are moving to Springfield, there's that whole, like, issue of, are we going to choose, how are we going to live? And now that I don't believe that self-preservation is the most important thing, like, I don't think that my goal in life is just to live a long time. And I now, like, have this kind of surreal belief in something much greater than myself, someone much greater than myself. And in my life thinking, like, I'm kind of like a sociologist in my brain at all times. So I'm also always thinking, like, in terms of, like, what does this mean for all of us? And so what does this mean for all of us in the house that we're going to live in Springfield? So naturally, we moved to the hood. And I didn't really know at that time, like, what this next season was also going to look like. And I'm going to try to fast forward through this. But I thought that, like, I had really been, like, stripped down of, like, my comforts and, like, what, you know, like, I thought that, like, I had, like, been through something, you know. And then the Lord is like, I'm just going there. So now I found myself, we bought this house strategically, like, we weren't ignorant of what was around us, but we strategically bought a house kind of in the thick of, like, the news headlines. So what you hear about Springfield, that's where we are. We live specifically next to a flop house. Anybody know what a flop house is? Yeah. Do you want to explain, or you want me to?
You can explain. Okay.
So a flop house is specifically where people go to do their drugs. Specifically, even like most of the homeless community who don't have a home. But you kind of, like, whenever you're on drugs and you're, like, really, like, wigging out or whatever, you need, like, a dirty mattress to lay on for a few days to pass out and recover from. So that is our next door neighbors.
Currently.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I still have two small children, and my husband and I just really felt like we feel very strongly that we want to be a light of what a real human looks like. Because we've kind of splintered off into almost subhuman particles whenever we're at the point where we're living on dirty mattresses in the flop house. So we're, like, gardening in our backyard. Like, we're literally, like, the flop house is, like, at that pole. And so, like, my kids, like, know about, like, planting tulips while there's a knife fight right there, you know. And they've heard every explicit and every term for male genitals in the book. My kids have heard it all. And those explicits have even been directed at us, just because, you know, like, when you're angry, you're just angry. And my kids have learned how to love people whenever it is so uncomfortable. And so, like, we go and we're like, man, this Susie, I guess she was her name, is really upset today. Like, man, should we love her? Yeah. Like, how can we pray for her? So it's been a cool experience to, like, teach my kids to move towards those who are suffering in lots of capacities. And but I find myself sick again. And you might say, what? If God took it away, how, if that is what happened, then how could you get sick again? I don't know, but I did. For everybody who told me that could have happened, I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm not writing this story. So I'm sick again. And our house, like, you know, you think, like,
I forgot about your house.
Oh, my house gets infested with bed bugs. I don't know if you guys have had bed bugs, but if you live in the hood, you're probably going to get it, because if it's outside your house, it's going to come inside your house. And I had a family member that I lost. I'm getting sick again. The SWAT team is so boring to me at this point, like, them being around my house, that, like, I just go to bed. I don't even see if they got the guy out of the house anymore. So this is the reality that I'm in. And I'm just like, okay, everything is uncomfortable. Like, before, I kind of had, like, this, like, little, like, holiday home in the country, and I was really sick. Now I'm sick, and I'm in the middle of the hood, and things are crazy, and my heart is broken because of the loss of my family member. And I'm just like, what is the message for hope for me in this? And I just kind of realized, like, what we sell is really short-sighted. Like, if the goal in life is to be, like, healthy and wealthy, like those people who say, like, if you have your health, you have it all, I'm like, I want to punch you in the nose. Like, don't tell me I can't have it all if I'm sick. Like, don't tell me that, like, because I don't have tons of money or I don't have house on this, you know, like, swanky neighborhood, that, like, life can't be good for me. But that's the message that we in turn do, even in our very educated, very, you know, successful places. So I just started really examining, like, how are we portraying, what is the message that our life is sending? Like, what is the thing that is really what we need? And I'm going to cut it off, but I will say, we were getting ready to move to Arizona to camp out at Mayo Clinic till we figured out what was happening with me, like, this last Thanksgiving. My husband already, like, told his job. He was applying for jobs in Arizona. I'm like, I know that prayer. I believe that prayer took it from me before, so I'm just going to have the people at our church pray for me before we go. And then you know what freaking happened? He took it again! And I didn't know that, like, I couldn't even remember what healthy felt like until it was gone again. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is what normal feels like. Like, all of a sudden, all, you know, guys, if you know somebody who's sick, please don't judge them for, like, the trash in their yard, for their messy house, for their, like, now that I'm well, sure, I can go to the grocery store, I can make three meals a day for my family, and I can keep up my house. Before, I couldn't go to the grocery store, are you kidding me? I would have loved to, but I couldn't. If I made one meal a day, that was good, but cleaning it up afterwards, well, maybe a couple days later. Like, the reality that a sick person, and whatever this causes sickness, and I still have no idea what it was. I don't know. So that could maybe relate to somebody, but whatever it is, I couldn't control it. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't cure myself. There wasn't, like, the thing. I wish that there was the thing that I did that took it away, because actually, whenever it was just taken away again, I couldn't sleep anymore because I was so terrified it was going to come back. So I'm kind of still currently in this season right now because this, like, just happened over the holidays. But the reality that it wasn't me and I can't control it is terrifying. Like, it's completely terrifying because I don't want to go back there. But you probably just need to not put this on the thing. But okay. there was a guy named Paul that wrote a letter to some people, and he, like, back in the day, like, first century, in jail, you don't take care of people's needs. Like, the jailers didn't take care. Like, you don't even feed the people that are in jail in first century history. So you have to have people come and give you food. So if nobody comes around because whoever comes to give you food, they're now a target. They have a target on their back if they come give you food, because they might. Anyway, so there's this guy, and he wrote this letter to people who had just given him food, and he was so thankful. It was like a thank you letter. And he was saying, but I have learned the secret of contentment, that whether I am hungry or I have plenty, I can do all things. So I just want to say, for those of you who are suffering currently, you don't have to be the powerful one. I'm not powerful. And I might be sick again tomorrow. I don't know. I'm not the author of this whole thing. I would love to be. I think I'm a really good life designer. But my designs haven't been the thing. So that's my weird, twisted story. The end.
Right now in your life, are you happy?
Yes. That's crazy. Good question. I would say that I wouldn't have been able to say so even like a month and a half ago, but there's been this thing that's happened in my heart in this lesson of contentment that is going doing some deep stuff there. And kind of like almost like where I'm like waking up to like a bigger reality than this narrow one that I could create for myself. Kind of like building a sandcastle when like you realize I am a really good sandcastle designer, and then you realize like, wait a minute, and then you realize that you can be a part of something sturdier, and it's and bringing a lot of joy, comfort.
In that second bout of illness, did you fall into depression again?
Mm-hmm.
Did you fall harder?
Yeah. I think I did because the darkness was so heavy. It was like, I felt like I could cut it. It was so thick because it came from so many places, and I had no strength. I had no strength, and I think in some ways too that it came back. That was a hard pill to swallow.
Do you ever find yourself wrestling with God and why and? Why and when and mm-hmm. anger towards him?
Mm-hmm.
Ask him for a friend.
Yeah. I absolutely. But then also, I would look at like the story of like my neighbor who ran the flop house. And he was shot in the head when he was 6, at the same time that he saw his mom shot right in front of him. His girlfriend, who is this really loud lady, also had some similar type stories. And then I started also like kind of finding this reality of this is the reality. This suffering, the sooner that I can stop believing that my life is supposed to look cute and pretty and have this beautiful like upward climb, like the sooner I can trash that, the more fulfillment and the more like joy I am gonna find. Because I don't know about you guys, but is your life always pretty and sexy? No. Like, that's not the reality, but there's, like, this thing that's being sold to us that, like, that's what life is supposed to be. Instead of patience and suffering, instead of, like, what is being changed in me for the good, for my good even. And even though this is hell, and I wouldn't wish it on my enemy, like, what is this doing in me, and how can it be for good? And so, like, having to trash this, like, oh, the injustice. Yes, I hate injustice, and I believe we are to fight against it, but I also believe that this is part of the human experience. The sooner that we can let go this notion that all suffering is, something must be wrong. But really, I've looked and searched. I told you I'm a sociologist. I've looked and searched for examples of these like perfect utopian societies. It doesn't exist in our history. So why do we want to create it now? But it is through the suffering, it is through the hard things of life that create who we are. And may we not splinter off into subhuman particles through it. But it's hard.
This might seem like a really crazy question, but like with everything that you've learned throughout your experience, would you take it all back if you could?
I was talking to Rob Harris about that the other day. I don't know if you guys know who that is. At certain times, I think I would have said, like, I would have not. But now, I'm like an old lady now. And I am truly thankful. And I don't know that I can say, like, every piece of suffering, like, feels good. Because it doesn't. But I will say I am so thankful for it. Because, and I was saying this to another buddy of mine the other day, it has rescued me from so much shallowness of like sculpting my life around my upward ascent and my own cuteness.
Do you think that would be the true suffering? Like just the ignorance to
Ooh.
All of it?
I'm just going to let that one hang.
On the first time, whenever you thought you were dying, was there a point where you were no longer afraid, ever?
Of dying? Yeah, I wasn't, like, afraid particularly. I was sad. I don't think there was ever a moment I wasn't sad. Because it's like, why, like, it can't be good, like a mom of like a 2 and 4 year old, like, you know, I took statistics of child abuse and neglect, like I know like what happens to kids who grow up, and I'm like, no, why would you put that on my kids? To not that like anything is beyond a good ending of that. So I was always like sad of like, oh, it's gonna be hard for them if this happens, but I don't think that I was afraid because I did find so much hope in like this belief that God could take care of them and that he could take care of me.
It's like you worry for those you're going to leave behind, not yourself.
Yeah, I was pretty worried.
Because you're going to a great place, so.
And the pain was like for real though.
So you're ready.
So what got you, like, with medication? Were you mad at it? Is that why you stopped? Or is it because it just never got you anywhere?
Yeah, both. I was mad at it because it never got me anywhere. Not to say, like, stop taking your medication. Because you gotta do what you gotta do and, like, and I, like, one of my best friends is a practitioner. Like, I don't have anything against the medical field. If I were to say, like, I trust it, I'd be lying. But I believe in, like, there is so much beauty and we've made so much progress. Like, we are turning into old people in our society now, and I think we can thank medicine a lot for that. My daughter, who is my little warrior, this morning was like, I heard on the news last night that there's an outbreak of measles. And I was like, girl, you had your immunization. You're all right. You won't get the measles. So, like, I'm not anti
know your Enneagram? Enneagram?
Yes.
What is it?
Because she of this said girl. This girl. She made me. Like it. Yeah, I'm a seven. Which, imagine being a seven who can't get off the couch.
Explain what a seven means. What are you trying to avoid?
For those of us who don't know what that is, could you care to explain a little bit?
It's just like this personality thing, and it's kind of, I would say it's pretty faith and spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Kinda.
But the numbers don't really have an order, but it goes through 1 through 9, and they just kind of have, like, a 1 is a perfectionist, a 2 is a helper, 3 is, I can't remember 3, I'm a 4, 4 is the romantic. And they're, like, really emotional. And so, yeah, it just keeps going. 7 is, like, an excitable. And it's based on, like, your desires in life and your fears.
Mm.
Your, like, biggest desire of your heart and your, like, biggest fear in your heart. And that's mainly what it's based on. You can take the test. The test isn't very accurate.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's, like, the peacemaker. And
yeah, peacemaker
the
is
achiever.
Nine. Achiever is a 6.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of different
Thank
ones.
Thank you.
But, yeah, it's cool.
Too lazy to make up names for them, so just number them all.
Actually, Mother Teresa took this test, which I think, and she was a command. She was an 8.
Oh, yeah.
She was an 8.
8. Yeah, I like 8.
An 8 and a 2, which I think was pretty crazy cool.
But I think that is interesting to ask because of the fact that, you know, your personality type so avoids pain with, like, fun. And, like,
yeah.
Adventure.
It's always, like, you always are looking to the future, so you're not looking at the right now. It's a 7 kind of type of deal.
Your, like, life experience forced you into pain and into the present.
Yeah.
Guys, we have, like, 1 minute. Does anyone have a pressing final question? I'm also going to do a weird thing where I'm going to take roll by taking a picture of you. So,
I haven't.
Cool.
That's
love that.
Did you have to deal with, like, fear of, like, everything ever in the world? And, like,
like, before I was sick, you mean?
Yeah.
You know, I would have probably said that I wasn't very fearful. Because I kind of thought of myself as this, like, really capable, like, can, like, go and do anything. There were certainly, I remember when I was living in Taiwan at one point, like, I was struggling with some pretty major fears. But, overall, I don't know that I was, like, a fearful person. Is that your question?
Yeah.
How much would you say this experience humbled you?
Can I answer that one?
Not, yes!
100%. Not did it humble you, just how much.
But how?
Yeah. I mean, because I was that person who really thought that I could, like, acquiesce the world. And, you know, like, I had learned languages. Like, I thought, you know, like, I can do it. I can really do it. And then when you can't do it, and, like, brain fog, and the, like, everything is, it woke me up to my own reality. My own real reality of, like, strength. Is it really mine? And if it's really mine, then I should be able to keep it. Or is strength a gift that I'm not in charge of? So, very humbling, but good. Because I don't want to live in the delusion that I am powerful and strong. Ultimately, that leads to all kinds of nastiness.
This is a kind of weird question, maybe a little bit off left field, but due to your experience with your faith and your viewpoint of it's not my power, but it's a gift and something that I can't control, do you tend to take a deterministic or kind of free existence kind of view. Like, do you believe that you determine your own destiny, or do you think that it's determined for you?
Well, the whole, like, am I the captain of my own ship? Yeah, I would say that I don't believe that. Because if I was the captain of my ship, it would have looked real different.
Okay. I would have thought.
I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I long for that reality. It's not the one I found.
Good stuff.
I'm learning about my friend through all your questions. It's interesting.
You know, whenever you said they were going to ask questions, I'm like, these are a bunch of high school kids. They're not going to have any good questions.
Aww, yes. I take offense to that.
You guys are amazing. Goodness. I just want to come and, like, do this every day.
I have your life. Living the dream. Feel free. I mean, can you stick around for just a little bit if anyone want to ask you more, like, private questions? But if you need to go to class, your bell did ring, so...
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.